I'm Rick Sanchez, and I've been covering news for something like 35, 40 years. Among the things that I have covered are many, many plane crashes, and I'm here to tell you that just based on my experiences, this is one of the most horrific plane crashes that I have ever seen for several reasons. So this is the Sanchez Effect. Let's do this. One of the most difficult things when covering plane crashes is not just the plane crash itself and trying to figure out what caused it, but thinking about the people who are affected by this type of situation. What you are seeing right now is the actual footage of the plane after leaving the airport, really just a matter of seconds, and then not being able to stay in the air and then crashing into the ground. As bad as that may sound, and many of you who've been watching this have maybe made this realization, what's worse is it didn't crash into a field or an empty field or an empty ground or perhaps a part of the airport. What it actually crashed into was a neighborhood where there are families and there are children and there are buildings, in fact, residences, for the most part, apartment buildings, which the plane crashed into. We're looking at some of the video as it's coming in right now. And you can see in some of these videos actually part of the fuselage of the plane as it went into the building and affected some of the people there. By the way, we don't have exact numbers now for the number of people on the ground who were affected this, but interestingly enough, we do know that almost every single person who was on this plane, 242 people plus a few pilots and 10 other crew members, flight attendants for the most part, have all perished, we're sorry to say. We are getting one bit, and usually that's the way these things are in these types of stories. We have just received, moments ago, information that there is a lone survivor in this case. We just moments ago got this confirmation just as we were getting ready to go on the air. I want to share it with you. I don't know, Gene, if we're able to put this up, but we have the information. There he is. This gentleman apparently was Mr. Ramesh. He was sitting in seat 11A. He was near the emergency exit. And as the story goes and the information that we are receiving and sharing with you as we speak, he was able to jump off the plane. He was able to jump off the plane just as the plane was getting hit, getting ready to hit the ground. And apparently that's how he was able to save himself. It sounds at this point, and obviously we're going to be asking a lot of questions to try and get more confirmation of this, but he knew the impact was coming, so he jumped off the plane before the impact with the ground and with the building. Once again, his name is Ramesh. Ramesh Vishwas Kumar. He was assigned to seat 11A, and as we're told, he was near the emergency exit, and apparently that's what made the difference for him. The story now confirmed by RT, which means we're able to give you that information. The rest of it is what you're seeing now, by the way, is what makes this story so tragic. It's the fact that this hit a neighborhood. The neighborhood in this area is one. It's right near the airport, by the way. It's a residential area. It's called Ahmedabad. Ahmedabad is a community right next to there. It's in Gujarat, which is part of the area or province where this took place. Interestingly enough, and almost this is almost a side note as we're looking at some of this, but the leader of India, Mr. Modi, actually used to be the chief minister before he became prime minister, was the chief minister of this area, which means he has a very direct connection to this area. As we look at some of these videos, let me share with you some of the numbers for those of you just now catching up with this story that took place about 1 o'clock this afternoon, Indian time. The plane crashed into the residential area. It was flight 171 from Air India with 242 people on board. Once again, 241 of those have perished. One has survived. The plane is a Boeing 787 Dreamliner, a plane that, as you well know, Boeing has had plenty of problems in the past, but as far as we know, not necessarily with this particular type of plane, although that too is sometimes conflictive information, because you will hear that there have been some reports about this plane as well. The residential buildings, some of which you're looking at right now, lots and lots of damage. Fires, large volumes of fuel in the tanks have caused this to become literally a conflagration. You really have to consider that what makes this type of plane crash so unique is that if you consider a plane, and you've probably seen plane crashes and before, plane crash situations before where the plane crashes, but it had already been up in the air for a long time. In fact, that's oftentimes when you see that they have to do an emergency landing because the landing gear doesn't work on planes. What they ask the pilots to do sometimes is to burn off as much fuel as they possibly can in case there's an emergency. Because what really causes the problems that we're seeing right here and the issues with other people who may be affected is all that fuel that's inside the plane. Well, think about that. When the plane has just taken off, it is loaded with fuel. So the moment it hits, whatever it hits on impact, it's almost like a missile, almost like a bomb hitting the ground. So for the people in this community, that's what they felt, that's what they saw, and that's where it's very likely. As we watch this once again, right here, you see the plane is trying to see if it can get lift, which pilots will tell you is so essential. It's essentially the air that rubs under the wing. And when that air hits the wing, that's how the plane is go up. But look at this plane. As you're looking at it, you can see that it's not going up. The pilot is desperately trying to get lift, but he's not able to get lift. We don't know why, by the way. And a lot of people are, there's got to be a lot of conjecture on this. Was it a bird? Was it pilot error? Was it some kind of problem with the fuel? Was it mechanical? At this point, we don't know. And for those of you who are wondering, by the way, because we know that this area has been in the news lately with the conflict between Pakistan and India, at this point, we can report that there is no reason to believe, at this point, no reason to believe that terrorism or any kind of foul play is suspected in this particular plane crash. What we find out in the future, well, we don't know at this point, but I think it's important to point that out at this point, that right now we don't know what caused the plane crash, although a lot of folks are trying to figure out exactly what happened. Of course, the cockpit voice recorder will be recovered at some point, as will the flight data recorder. And those two things are what will usually give folks that at NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, who will usually come in and do a thorough investigation. And after seeing those two devices, they'll be able to figure out what it is that actually caused this situation. What I want to do now is I want to bring in our correspondent. She is there in India. Runjun Sharma has been following this situation throughout the course of the day and can hopefully shed some light. You know, I think what most people are fascinated by was this particular community, where this happened. There must be just a bevy of stories that you've probably heard, Runjun, about what people are saying there, what happened, what they heard, what witnesses may have been sharing. What can you share with us?
You see, the Dreamliner, it crashed in a city called Ahmedabad in the western state of Gujarat. And it really crashed in this dense residential area. So on top of a building, and this building was essentially a medical college hostel where students basically of this medical college, they stay. Now, what I've been given to understand is that there are some feared dead in that hostel, in that building where the plane really crashed, but there's no official confirmation on that at the moment. We will hear soon from the officials. So apart from the 242, or say, because there's one survivor now found, around 240 people who died in AI-171, there are also more people who have died in that building. Yes. Where the AI-171 really went and crashed.
Well, it makes sense. And by the way, I think, Gene, I don't know if you can find some of those pictures while Shunjun and I are talking, but we've seen videos of cars on the ground burning. We've seen rubble from the plane. We've seen parts of the plane, parts of the fuselage, part of the cockpit that apparently have hit buildings and cars and people. If we can, and I think we just have to imagine what's this like. This is a busy street, a busy community. People were going about their business without warning when all of a sudden this massive plane just came out of the sky, struck not only the street, but then essentially bounced into trees, communities, cars, and eventually these buildings that you're talking about. Just to flesh that out a little bit, is what you're hearing that perhaps that picture we see of the fuselage and part of the plane sticking out from the building, that's the building that caught fire and where there are probably going to be several deaths, if not more? Shunjun?
100%. Yeah. 100%. So we're talking about over 242 deaths that have been reported from the AI-171. This is a very dense area where the plane went and crashed, and the kind of visuals we've seen, those are horrific. Those are unreal pictures. This Ahmedabad plane, this is basically Air India, from Ahmedabad, it was a London-bound plane, it took off. It wasn't in the air for even a few minutes when it crashed. It was at the altitude of about 650 odd feet, just that much, and it crashed. Of course, lots of speculations right now about an engine failure or a bird strike. But of course, one really has to wait for the flight data records, the black boxes, as they're called, to be recovered, to be able to know what really went down there. But really, the people on the ground in Ahmedabad are extremely scared. It's almost unreal visuals that we've seen of this gigantic Boeing plane that went and crashed right into this dense residential area. We saw the tail of that plane sometime, you know, the fire in the air. You know, when we received this news, really, of the plane crash, the first reaction obviously is, were there survivors? Have people survived? But very soon, as the visuals came out of you know, almost fire engulfed in the sky, not very high, but it was very clear that there wouldn't be many survivors. And for now, what we know is that 53 British nationals, 7 Portuguese, 1 Canadian, 2 infants as well, and over 160 Indians have died in this plane crash.
That sounds terrible. What can you tell us, by the way, about this community where the plane crashed into it? Is it a chiefly residential area? Is it industrial? What would have been happening about this time of the day, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, when this plane made impact with the ground there?
People really going about their you know, day-to-day stuff, really, because it's this dense residential area. It's safe to say, you know, this was something like the hour when school gets over. Perhaps, you know, there were mothers at home, Gujarati mothers waiting for their kids to come back from schools, busy streets, lots of hustle and bustle. And out of nowhere, this plane, this AI-171, the Dreamliner, the Boeing 787-8, it basically comes and it crashes on the top of this building of a hostel, of a medical college. And like I said, it's almost certain that many are feared dead there as well. It's only a matter of getting an official confirmation.
I mentioned just a little while ago, in fact, that we don't know the cause. And I think we've been stressing at this point that it's important at this time to try and present you all the facts of the story as best we can, show you some of the images that we can, because, and we should mention that there are some images that we've decided not to show you because they're just so graphic and so horrible that they're just very difficult to look at. Not to mention, it's out of respect for some of the folks who are family members who are following along with us on the air right now, I'm sure, watching this story as it develops. But it behooves us nonetheless, I think, at this time, Runjun, to ask questions about whether there has been any reporting at all. I have not seen anything, but you're there in New Delhi, and perhaps you have different information about whether there have been any reports of threats prior to this happening, or any reports of activity in the terror networks, or any reports of foul play whatsoever. I haven't heard any. Have you?
Well, none. You know, for now, this is not being examined, any sort of terror angle there. Well, you know, it's a fair question for you to ask me, considering India just saw this horrific yes. attack in Kashmir. We've had tensions between India and Pakistan. Gujarat, well, is in the Western Front. It's a state that, again, borders with Pakistan. But for now, this particular crash, it's not been looked at from that lens. The speculations really here being the regular speculations that we hear when we see a plane crash, you know, an engine failure or a bird strike, for example. But of course, investigation and a thorough investigation is what is being demanded. This is being looked at the highest level. In fact, the Prime Minister of the country, Narendra Modi, also is monitoring the situation very, very closely. Let me also tell you, Rick, that Gujarat also happens mm-hmm. to be the home state of Narendra Modi.
Yeah.
So he's from Gujarat himself. And Gujarat really has been this model in India of development, so to say. So this kind of plane crash, and let me also point out here, and it really would be safe to say that a plane crash of this magnitude really has been reported after decades in India. In fact, you know, I frankly cannot even remember a plane crash this bad in my memory. I mean, we're talking about what, 240 people mm-hmm. who've lost their lives.
By the way, on board the plane, 169 of those who have perished, maybe at this point 168, since we told you that there's one survivor, are Indian nationals. Of the rest of the passengers, 53 were English, or at least from the UK, UK citizens, we should say. There was also one noted person with a connection to the community where this happened. Maybe perhaps you can tell us a little bit about this, Runjun. His name is Vijay Rupani. I understand that he was the former governor of Gujarat. Is that correct?
It is, in fact. Remember, I mean, we're talking about a London-bound plane there. So it would be fair to assume that the former chief minister of Gujarat is or was not the only high-profile person, a passenger on this plane. We're talking about 242-odd people who were on that plane. You just mentioned some 53 British nationals.
Correct.
We're also talking 7 Portuguese, 1 Canadian, 2 infants as well. But the story that you mentioned in the beginning of your show, Nick, about that lone survivor, you know, who was seated in... Mm-hmm. 11A, that really comes out of as this miraculous story from this plane crash. He almost walked out scratch-free. You know, there are visuals of him walking out, and then later, of course, he was admitted in the hospital. But again, you know, in crashes like these, there are one or two odd miraculous stories always that are being reported. And in this case, it was this gentleman who was on seat 11A. But unfortunately, almost all of the other passengers, and that's an official confirmation that we have, they have lost their lives. And we're also talking about 2 babies, you know, 2 infants here.
Yeah.
So it's
yeah.
terrible, terrible news.
Runjun, you're doing an excellent job covering this for us. We thank you so much. Runjun Sharma, Stand by, Runjun. We may be coming back to you as we try and clear up things. We're still, for those of you who are just now joining us here at RT, we've been spending much of our time following this breaking news story. In case you haven't heard some of the details, let me just do a little bit of a reset for you. It's Flight 171, Air India. Flight 171, 242 people on board. The plane crashed just as it was taking off. And unfortunately, as you can see right there, and we'll watch it together one more time, the plane crashes as it's trying to create lift in its wings, but was not able to, and instead crashed into a community of many thousands of people who were going about their day, going about their business at the time. You've just heard our correspondent mention that it's very likely that some of the people on the ground have perished as well. In fact, she's all but confirming at this point, and we'll continue to work on this for you, that there's one particular building, and I think you might see some of the there it is there, where you can actually see part of the fuselage that's sticking out of the building, which shows that there was part of the plane after bouncing on the ground that was able that actually got stuck. There it is. To the building itself, as horrific as you can only imagine that must have been. Reaction is pouring in from around the world, as you might imagine. I think we have some of those for you so you can see. We've had reaction from world leaders responding to this and talking specifically to some of the folks in India. Of course, the Prime Minister Modi himself has made a comment, and you can see there for yourself the comments that have been made by, oh, and Vladimir Putin. You know, you have to understand, by the way, and this is important, that there's a very close relationship between Mr. Putin and India, especially since the things that have been going on post-sanctions in Russia. So this is a very close relationship, which is why you see Vladimir Putin reaching out to Prime Minister Modi at the time. Also, I understand Prime Minister Starmer has reached out to Mr. Modi and given the condolences as well from the British people. Obviously, this is an important part of the story because, as we mentioned just moments ago, 53 of the people who perished on this plane were British citizens. We should add, by the way, that the lone survivor who we showed you moments ago is also a British citizen. And we've just been able to confirm that right now. And once again, only because this story seems so dramatic, almost like something you hear about in a novel or a movie, the lone survivor, as we understand it, was able to save himself because he was sitting next to the exit, was able to somehow open the door or force it open, and jumped out before the plane made impact with the ground. And that is how he was able to survive this plane crash. And once again, this is all according to reports that we've been able to confirm. There he is now. That's the picture of him that was taken, of course, after the incident. He was sitting in 11A on the plane. And it's a story that's reverberating, as you might imagine, around the world. This is the Sanchez Effect. We're going to be staying on top of this story. We expect more information to come in. And at this point, obviously, there's a lot of questions as to how this could have possibly happened. What we will do is we're going to be talking to a pilot and aviation expert. Cyril Delatre is going to be joining us here in just a little bit to take us through some of the questions that I have, and I'm sure you have, as to why it is that this plane was not able to get enough lift. What are some of the conditions that could have caused something like this? What do we need to know about this specific brand of Boeing plane? We're going to ask those questions, hopefully get some answers, share more information, and as the information comes in, we here are going to share it with you on the Sanchez Effect. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Britain has been guilty of goading the Ukrainians on by making promises which it really had no intention of fulfilling. That, to my mind, is almost criminal, because its outcome has been hundreds of thousands of lives.
We need to counter the Russian state-controlled narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi. C'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly, all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is The Sanchez Effect, and I'm going to be joined now by an aviation expert and, more importantly, a pilot who knows what it's like for these several pilots who just went through this experience. This is Cyril Delatre, who's good enough to join us to share some of this information. For those of you just joining us right now, let me just do a quick reset. We're going to put some pictures up so you can see what's happened. And I guess probably, you know, it's rare that you can actually capture a plane crashing as it happens, but because this happened in a community, there just happens to be video of it. There's the plane right now. It's a Dreamliner, tries to take off, apparently not able to get lift. And as it's not able to get lift, it goes in the other direction, right back into the ground, hits a community. We do know that all but one of the passengers on this plane and the crew have all perished. And it was leaving from Ahmedabad Airport at the time and has crashed into a residential neighborhood. Well, Cyril, I guess we have to start with that video, and I'm going to ask Gene, our director, to put it up one more time, and I want you to describe for us as best you can, and I'm sure you've seen it before, what comes to mind as you're looking at that video for us?
Well, the first thing that I thought is I wanted to listen to that video with the sound on. And I have been able to listen to that video, so we know that we have noise. So we know that at least one engine was running, if not both engines.
Fascinating.
Yeah, because one could understand that with an airliner like the 787 and most of the airliner today, if not all of them, and all of them are, you can sustain a takeoff with only one engine.
Hmm.
That's not a problem. But the thing is, it might get tricky if you have a wrong flap setting, for example. You will have a lose of lift, and then it's going to be much more complicated.
So the flap is essentially what needs to go up and down, and that flap allows the wind to then go under or over the plane.
Well, the thing is that if you look at the wing setting, what makes an aircraft flight is the depression going over the wing, right?
Right.
So when you want to take off, you definitely want to be able to take off at lower speed, and landing also. But for this, you need to modify the wing profile, so you have slats and you have flaps, and that's going to help you to take off and land at lower speed but requiring more power for landing, for example.
If every pilot, even the little bit of piloting that I did when I was trying to learn nothing like your stature, knows that if something is wrong with that flap at takeoff or landing, in fact, you're in trouble.
Well, a long time ago, you would have been in trouble since the first accident that we had in the 60s and the 70s. Mm-hmm. Now we have security. On the 787, for example, if for any given reason the crew forget to select the flaps 5, because flaps 5 is the most common setting for 787 takeoff.
Right.
If you forget to do this, you will have an alarm that will sound once you pass 50% of power that will say flaps, 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 so you won't take off.
Hmm.
So obviously when they took off with the correct flap setting, at least flaps 1 or flaps 5. What comes after is something that we don't know because, for instance, we haven't been able to listen to any cockpit voice recorder or to analyze any flight data recorder. So did they have an engine failure but were for any given reason not capable to fly on one engine? That's, we don't know. Did they flew through a flock of birds and then they lost power on both engines?
Right.
We do not know neither. What we see for sure is that there is noise, so at least one engine was running, if not both of them, and they were not in double engine failure. Because if that was the case, you would have seen under the fuselage the RAT, the ram air turbine, that would have been automatically deployed to give hydraulic power.
What about the possibility of some kind of microburst?
You don't have any CBs.
At that point?
At that point, you don't have any
thunderstorms.
You checked
the weather? There was nothing at that point?
Blue skies.
Yeah.
Blue skies. So, no, I didn't check the weather, but I mean, by looking at the videos that we've been looking, there is no CBs, no thunderstorms, or no microburst, nothing
activity
associated,
in the area.
Nothing associated with a thunderstorm.
I ask you this, and you know, I've been watching this story throughout the day, and as soon as I first started seeing this, I thought to myself, I just graduated. It was 1982. I just graduated from the University of Minnesota. I got my first job in journalism. I was working in Miami, and they said, get on a plane. We need you to go to Louisiana because a Pan Am flight has just crashed into Kenner, Louisiana, and it's crashed into a neighborhood. There's the pictures right now.
Yep.
Very similar situation as to what happened here. Plane was taken off, boom, goes into a neighborhood. People die. Everybody on the plane died as well. I'm telling you, it was one of the most harrowing experiences I've ever had. I was a very young man. And back then, I was walking in the debris and seeing what I've seen in these pictures today. There are an awful lot of body parts.
I know.
After a situation like this. Now, in this particular case, it was a microburst, and the flight was at night, which makes a very different circumstance, I imagine, correct?
Yeah. Very different, because on modern airline, you have weather radar much more developed than it used to be before. And we have a wind shear detection.
Yes.
And we have procedures. Like, if you have thunderstorms, you will have obviously very strong upwind and very strong downwind, and you have a change in wing, right? So when the aircraft line up on the runway, we switch on the radar, weather radar, sorry, and we have the wind shear detection system, as the airport has the wind shear detection system also. And if we hear wind shear, then we just do not take off.
It literally says that.
Yeah, of course.
Right, yeah.
And when you come to land or when you are taking off, once you are airborne, for example, if you have a wind shear detection, then on different, I mean, on Airbus, for example, it's going to be full toga, pull the stick, and then you climb as much as you can. You do not touch the flap setting, nor the gear, nor anything. And once you have the end of wind shear, then you can clean up and resume normal.
I'm going to ask you to do something that's very probably difficult for you, or maybe not. I want you to try and put us in the mind of that pilot. What was he thinking? What was he experienced? What were his last thoughts and emotions like from what you can tell in this situation?
Well, obviously, if I'm talking to you, it's because I'm still alive. So I never,
so never experienced it. I
but,
know.
But,
but you've probably thought about it a million times.
Well, because a long time ago, I lost my best friend, who was also my wedding witness. He was
best
a pilot.
Man.
Yeah, best
yeah.
man. He was an
Sorry
airline
to hear
captain.
That.
Yeah, sure. He was an airline captain also, and he crashed. And I worked with flight safety in the full flight sim, trying to reproduce exactly what happened in that aircraft that day. So by doing different kind of scenario, I killed myself almost 10 times in that sim. So I can have a pretty fair idea, if even if I'm still alive, that first, as a pilot, you're going to fly the aircraft as mm-hmm. much as you can. But if we look at the video that we've been seeing, we can see this aircraft going down slowly, and then at one moment you can see that the aircraft is pitching up mm. and pitching back. And that's the pilot reflex. He sees the ground coming in. He said, no, I don't want the ground. So he's going to pitch up. And then at one point, you can see the
slowly. And when you say pitch up, he's literally pulling back.
Yeah, because you don't want to hit the ground. Yeah. Or you know that you're going to crash, and you want to pitch up at maximum of sustainability just to avoid a big impact. So you can see that aircraft. You see right there, you start to pitch, and then went one, poof.
How fast was that airplane going as it was hitting the ground?
To be very honest, it's very difficult to give you a precise speed, but I would say probably between 150 knots to 180 knots.
You're not going to survive that.
Well,
not if it's filled with fuel.
Well, this flight was supposed to go to England.
Gatwick Airport, yeah, I understand.
So this 787 can carry a lot of fuel, 36,000 pounds of fuel in each wing. It's a lot, and some fuel in the center tank. Well, the problem with kerosene is that you can spill some kerosene on the ground and then throw a cigarette in it. It's not going to do anything. But the vapor is very inflammable. The inflammation point is only 63 degrees. So when the aircraft is going to hit the building, all the fuel cells are going to be completely destroyed, and the fuel are going to be spilled on the engine and different hot part, and then it's gonna, you can see it, it's just going to a fireball.
You're watching live coverage of a horrible plane crash that's taken place in India. Yeah. This is the Sanchez Effect. I'm Rick Sanchez. We're joined by Cyril Delatre. He's a pilot. He's an aviation expert. For those of you who've been listening to him, you can tell he's marvelous at explaining exactly what was going on in this situation. And as we're getting more information, we're sharing it with you as it comes in. I have to ask you about this survivor. The story that we're getting, you saw the man's picture.
Yep.
The story that we're getting is that because he was near an exit, he was somehow able to open the door and jump out before the plane made impact. What do you make of that?
Well, it was his day. Or it was not his day. Depends the way you want to look at it. But this is just a miracle. I would have said it's just a miracle because just before being on set, somebody told me that there is a survivor. And I said, no, it's not possible. Mm-hmm. In an accident like this, it's barely impossible you have one. And seeing these guys that we see on picture that is alive and was able to jump out of the aircraft just at the impact,
crazy.
Right after, it's really a survival instinct. It's just incredible. It's a miracle.
And you would agree that the only way he was able to survive was because he got out before impact. In other words, if he waits, then he's part of that conflagration, that bomb effect almost of the plane hitting the ground.
Well, it was sitting in seat 11A. 11A, well, this particular aircraft is an aircraft that went out of production line in 2013.
Right.
It was tested in 2013 and delivered to Air India in 2014. So it's a young aircraft,
right,
basically. But it's an aircraft that is equipped by memory of 18 class seat and 232 economy seat. So he was sitting in the front section of the aircraft. Most probably, I don't know, this is pure speculation because both of us were not in the aircraft.
Of course.
Maybe when he understood that he had no chances, let's get out.
Yeah.
But when he did it, just at the impact, just before the impact, or right after the impact, you don't know.
And you know, we should probably mention, just journalistically speaking, I've covered of these types of stories all my life. The story we are able to confirm, even at this point, sometimes can change.
Of course.
So, you know, we can get different information that will give us more. So let's talk about the flight data recorder, and let's talk about the cockpit voice recorder. Those are the two instruments that the investigators are going to use now. What will that give them, and which one, if any, is more important as an investigator?
Well, as an investigator, both of them are very important because the cockpit voice, the CVR, the cockpit voice recorder, is going to be able to give us what the pilot said from the very beginning of the flight up to the last second of the
flight. And the tower.
And the tower also. We have all the radio communications, so all the checklist, all the procedures and everything. So we will be able to have a lot of information. As for the flight data recorder, we will know through this investigation if what was working, what was not working, did they have a failure? Did they have a loss of power? We will be able to gather absolutely everything. The good thing is that most of the time, those two devices are located on the back of the aircraft, and they are designed by construction to sustain a 2 hour fire. And we've been able to see that the tail section of the aircraft was partially saved in that building.
What does that tell you?
Well, that tells me that normally we should be able to recover this, and that will have to be analyzed and then investigated, and that's going to give you all the information that we need to discover what happened.
I mentioned that usually in cases like this, a plane bounces, literally bounces after hitting a ground. Is that how you think that ended up next to that building there?
Well, what I do believe is that for any given reason, that aircraft was capable to take off, that we know this. For another given reason that we don't know, for instance, it was not able to climb above 600 feet or 625 feet above ground level. And then they started to descend. And then at that point, we know by our colleague in India that this one of the pilots declared an emergency, even a mayday call, which is really, we're going to crash. So they knew that they were going to crash most probably. And we can see that the gear are down. So they never had the time to raise the gear. And at one point, once again, we can see that the aircraft is going down and that the pilot, they are like refusing the ground for survival instinct. So once again, we have so many speculations, so many, and I don't like, as a pilot myself,
of course,
I don't like to speculate.
It's early in the game.
It's way too early in the game, but I doubt this is a terrorist attack. We have no smoke. We have no fire on board indicated like this. With the sound of the video, we know that at least one engine was running. So we will definitely have to investigate much, much more.
Let's talk about something a lot of people are probably thinking about as they're watching something like this, which is why is there a community next to an airport right there at what appears to be almost the end of the runway? And why can't we avoid that situation?
That's a very complicated question. It's not complicated, but that's a very difficult question to answer because I may have to answer diplomatically speaking or in a more direct way. The thing is that most of the time, well, India is very particular because India is a very populated country. It's a very dense area. So it's probably not in their psychology or way of life to live far away from airports and takeoff and landing trajectory. Well, in European countries, it's a little bit different. In the United States, it's different also. I've been flying many times in the U.S.
And here in Moscow, when you fly into the airports in Moscow, you don't see cities. Yeah, you're outside the city for the most part.
You are outside of the city. But you see, for example, in France, we have a lot of problems with people because if you take Charles de Gaulle or Orly, those airports, they were there long, long time ago. And when they were designed, you didn't have so many houses and buildings all around. And then with the time going on, people, they started to build houses, started to build buildings and stuff like this. And you had people who were stupid enough to buy those apartments and those houses, and after they complain about the noise. Well, who was there first?
Right, exactly. You understand? Yeah, that's like buying a home on a golf course and complaining that there's a ball in your backyard.
Exactly, but in India, it's a little bit different. So I honestly cannot judge, but it's a very densely populated area. And,
do you think about that as a pilot when you're taking off and landing?
Yes, of course. Yes, of course. When I, in certain circumstances, especially when I was making flight demonstration, we always think about the inevitable, and it happened to me twice. I said, okay, if we have to crash, we have to crash here, 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 or here, and we have to be able to make it, not to crash on populations and houses and stuff like
that. You've actually thought about that?
Yes, sure.
Final question. Have you ever flown into this particular airport?
No, in that airport, no. But in the full flight 787 simulator, yes, I did. So I know a little bit of the aircraft. I do not hold a typewriting in that aircraft, but mm-hmm. I've been flying that aircraft quite a few times.
But it's not Boeing's troublesome airport. The MAX is the really bad airplane, at least the way it's been described as the media. I know you pilots may have a different opinion. They say they fixed it.
No, well, I mean, how could I say this? The 787, they had a lot of problems also with the 787. Mm-hmm. First, it started with the batteries. They had a lot of problems with
recall.
The batteries.
Yes.
Yeah, you recall. And then after Boeing, since they decided to hire a lot of people from McDonnell Douglas, they lost a little bit their engineer conception to become more financial, right? And then they have a lot of contractors and subcontractors. And if you remember, at the beginning of the conception of that aircraft, they had a lot of problems by assembling part of the fuselage. It was not done correctly, mm-hmm. so they had to work on this. And then a couple of years ago, I remember they had a problem of software. Because those aircraft, they are run through computers, right?
Yeah, right, of course.
And so I think it was in 2019 or 2020, something like this. I know that Boeing sent a service bulletin saying that if this particular update, which I don't remember the number, was not applied, they had to recycle completely the aircraft every 72 hours, which means that you have to switch off cold and dark, the aircraft, and then restart everything just to make sure you don't have that glitch. And that glitch had an impact on flight controls.
Hmm.
So, once again...
It's not the MAX, but it's also got its own problems.
Also got its own problem, but Airbus had the same problem also. I mean, every aircraft designer, they have their problems. We just need to work on them and then make the aircraft more safer.
Well,
which is the case, by the way, because that's the first crash of a 787.
It has been so important for our coverage to be able to have you here to take us through this explanation. You really are so, so smart when it comes to what aviation is, what current trends are, and to be able to actually pinpoint in this particular case some of the things that we should be looking at. That's very important for us.
Well, I was glad to be here, but sorry to be here in those circumstances.
Yeah, no, listen, I understand. It's always tough to look at these things.
Sure.
For those of you, and thank you once
you're
again.
Welcome.
For those of you watching us, I guess, and catching up and listening to this conversation with Mr. Delatre, let me just catch you up once again before we put this to bed at this point. Although we here at RT are going to continue to follow this story, we expect more updates. It is flight 171, Air India. It crashed upon trying to take off from the airport. There were 242 people on board. There were also a couple of pilots and 9 or 10, I understand, flight crew as well, flight attendants. All but one have perished at this point. And you can see right there what is the iconic piece of video that everyone is going to be talking about for the next several days. It's the pilot on this plane trying his best to try and get that lift, as we heard Pilot Luttrell explain to us, but somehow he was not able to, and instead the plane crashed into a residential community. We don't know at this point how many people have died in this neighborhood, but suffice it to say, and I think it's safe to say at this point, that there will be a bevy. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to stay on top of this story. As we get more information here at RT, we will continue to share it with you. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is The Sanchez Effect. We'll be looking for you again soon.